All right, Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. Chicago's system of elevated trains, known as the L, has run continuously since 1892. And like the city, has never stood still. It's helped neighborhoods grow, brought their increasingly diverse populations together, and gave the famous loop its name. But today's system has changed radically over the years. Chicago's Lost L's new book just tells the story about the former line, starts as Garfield Park, Humboldt Park, the Stockyards, and more. It was once possible to take high-speed trains on the L directly to Aurora, Elgin, and Milwaukee. And I must say it's the best way to experience the city with a second-story view. Now, there's a new book out there called Chicago's Lost L's, and David Sadowski is the author, and he joins us live in studio. David, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Here's something that's really wild. I have really had nobody back in the studio in such a long time. It's great to see some faces right across from me.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the L, the subways, the trolleys and trains have been a passion for you. And I've had you on the show for a long time. But it's been a long time for you getting it all into this. So how did you get into this?
As a kid, I liked watching the trains, and I saw changes going on. Some of the older things were disappearing, getting replaced by newer things. And I got curious about what was going on and the way things used to be. I got tied in with a kind of like an intelligence network.
Yeah.
Of rail fans, people who knew a lot more than I did, and it's been a lifelong interest.
You have a blog out there that's called thetrolleydodger.com. I was going through it today. It's truly some cool images in there from just a time gone by, you know?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I try harder to bring out a lot of great images, and a lot of it, of course, I have to buy, you know, but some of it, I've collected from people sharing things with me, and I inherited a photographic collection from a friend recently who passed away, and so it just gets bigger and bigger over time.
Public transit in our city really became a necessity and a focus after the Chicago fire.
Yes, the city grew fast. It was the world's fastest growing city in the late 19th century, and then when plans started for the World's Fair, 1893, mm-hmm. World's Columbian Exposition, that really put things into focus, because it's like, okay, we've really got to get serious about this, because millions of people are going to be coming here. And meanwhile, in New York City, they had already started building some elevateds, and so that idea was brought over here.
I was going to say 1892 was the year that the first L went up on the south side, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It only went as far as 39th Street then, because that was the city limits.
Okay.
And then shortly thereafter, the city grew by annexation, and then it was extended to the site of the World's Fair. And then, but the steam, it used steam trains.
It was
originally
steam. Yeah, operated, yeah.
Yeah. Electric stuff was new. And then there was a means of getting around at the fair, kind of like a distributor. It was called the Columbian Intramural Railway, and that used electricity with a third rail. And that was sort of like the proof of concept that made it feasible and practical to extend electricity to run the L.
How old are the structures that currently, you know, that are elevated? You see the big beams and everything. Have they been around since practically the beginning?
Some of them have.
Wow.
Some of them, yeah. Like on the Lake Street L, big stretches of that have been in place since the early 1890s.
Wow. Wow.
The L downtown, the loop, it brought four different different L lines together, four different companies, and they had terminals on the edges of the loop. It wasn't that efficient for distribution, and so someone, Charles Yerkes, kind of the robber baron of Chicago Transit, got the idea to connect all of them by the loop.
Yeah, he made a big role in putting that all together. Because I would say the drawback of the early L service, from what I read, was none of the lines really entered the main business district. You know, they dropped off passengers at terminals that weren't around there. And due to state law at the time, they required approval by neighboring property owners for tracks to be built over public streets and over properties. And that was not something that was very easy back then.
No, in fact, he managed to get the loop elevated built by sort of a sleight of hand, where he said that they were going to build it like another mile further west, because then he could get those owners to agree to it, and then a majority of the owners along the total path approved it, And then he just built the part that he wanted.
See, I think that might surprise some people. Like, you know, obviously it's all run pretty much by the CTA, but back then there was just different lines and different ownership. So you talk about in the book that there was a Metropolitan West Side L and a Lake Street L, and they were competitors. And, you know, again, you would just not think that there was just multiple companies all around town that owned different stretches.
Yes, and then even when they were all united by the Loop Elevated, which opened in 1897, you couldn't just transfer from one to another without paying another fare. That didn't happen until 1913, when they were all kind of brought under a common ownership.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the L-Line's Samuel Insull, and we'll talk a little bit about him, president of the Chicago Edison Electric Utility, which is ComEd, today, you know, his interest in buying the L or bringing the L together was because it was the city's largest consumer of electricity at the time.
Yes, well, when the Metropolitan West Side Elevated started, they had to generate their own electricity. They had a giant power plant on the west side.
Wow, to move it. That's amazing. Talk about a little bit about the Lake Street L. That was kind of the second one that was in place, right?
Yeah. That one went basically straight out west, but originally it only went as far as Laramie. And then it was extended in 1901 to run on the ground. So there's a ramp going down into South Boulevard in Oak Park, and then it ran on at ground level. It wasn't until 1909 or so that the embankment right next to it was built for the Chicago Northwestern commuter train. And then they had all these viaducts and manually operated gates. And it was kind of a dangerous operation then because there was blind spots galore. But I rode those trains when I was a kid. It ran that way till 1962 when it was finally put up onto the embankment.
Wow. Now, as you go around the city and kind of exploring some of this stuff, like what are some of the unique things that are still in place from the early days of the L, like the stations or some of the equipment and stuff that you've seen?
Well, there's one station on the Loop Elevated which has sort of been retained for historic purposes, and that's Quincy and Wells. And that's been restored to more or less something like its original appearance. And then there is a bridge. It's used for signals now. It's just a few blocks north of Lake Street near Palina. And that is a remnant of the old Palina Elevated that went to the northwest side. It was replaced by the Milwaukee Subway in 1951. But that's still there for signals for the metro trains.
I saw in the book and on your website as well that a lot of these cars are being rehabbed and repaired. Who's doing that? Is that the CTA or are these collectors? Like when you see things being redone and cleaned up a little bit.
Well,
some of the vintage trains.
The vintage ones mostly are in museums, and the Illinois Railway Museum has by far the best collection of those. There's also a few at the Fox River Trolley Museum in South Elgin. But the CTA does have some historical cars. They have a pair of 4,000 series cars, which are now almost 100 years old.
Wow.
And the 6,000 series cars, which date to the 1950s, they've got some of them back. They've got two pairs of those cars back from museums, and they've already ran a pair downtown a couple years ago.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. We were talking to author and historian David Sadowski. His new book is Chicago's Lost L's. He also has a great website out there called thetrolleydodger.com. And there's more with him next on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back in. It's Dave Player here on 720 WGN. We're talking to author and historian David Sadowski. His new book is Chicago's Lost L's. And he has a great website out there called thetrolleydodger.com. I always find this stuff so fascinating about our city because I don't want to say we take advantage of all the things that we have and the public trans and the history behind it, but it's just always so fascinating to me. And, you know, we talked a little bit about all the different companies that owned these L stations. Talk a little bit about the Northwestern Elevated Railroad. What were they all about?
Well, the Northwestern was the brainchild of Yerkes, Charles Yerkes.
Okay.
And it took the longest to get started. They were planning it in the early 1890s, didn't end up opening until 1900. There were some skirmishes with the city over the whether they were fulfilling their terms of their charter or their rights to run trains because they thought that they missed the deadline. They were like they would run like one train a day or something, and they were trying to fulfill their requirements of their franchise that way. But it was a boon to the whole North Side. And the area around Uptown grew tremendously as soon as the L went there. And they extended it further north by taking over a former commuter rail line that was run by the Milwaukee Road. And as part of that, they had to maintain freight service on the L.
While doing that.
So they took over the freight service, and they would run like freight at night. You know, they had coal companies and such along the L, and they have ramps going down into these companies. Wow. And they kept that freight service going until 1973. And gradually, around World War One, they started raising up the L off ground level north of Wilson. Yep. And then it was eventually raised all the way north, to practically almost all the way to Wilmette.
Wow. Wow. And when we think about this, too, and we talked a little bit about this out earlier, that a lot of the structures of the elevated trains in Chicago are from the 1800s, which is just crazy to me. But you talk about after the war and all that, the Depression brought bankruptcy to Chicago Rapid Transit. I mean, it was a tough time.
Yes. For 15 years, basically, there was nothing new purchased. Things were just rolling along as they had. No changes were made. They couldn't really hardly close anything or shut it down because it was all regulated by the state. They had the Illinois Commerce Commission, which wouldn't let them really do anything. They couldn't raise their fares. They were barely able to pay their bills until the CTA was created, basically in an act of desperation by the city, because otherwise the elevated system might have just simply collapsed.
That was the late 1940s, was it?
Yeah, well, they decided what to do in 1943. They wanted to use private ownership, but it was impossible because too much really needed the money needed to be invested in fixing up the L and modernizing it.
Talk to us about the L and the Loop.
Yes, well, they originally had, the segments were built one at a time, basically, the four corners of it, and where there used to be a station at the corner of Lake and Wells, where now there's this, you know, the intersection there, which everyone refers to as Tower 18, which is a very busy crossing, at one time the busiest railroad crossing in the whole world. And then they had 12 stations at one point. Now they're down to 8 because they've consolidated some. Now there's like 2 on each side.
The book is called Chicago's Lost L. So let's talk about those stations that were once in operation. And, like, you know, where did the L go that just doesn't go to anymore?
Oh, well, the stockyards,
for
one. There was a loop going around the stockyards. So they had one track, and they had stations there that had a platform only on one side. And it ran in counterclockwise. The trains downtown, by the way, for more than 50 years, ran in one direction only. On both tracks, they were running counterclockwise from 1913 to 1969. There were other lines like Normal Park, very short line. It went to 69th Street on the south side. Kenwood went around 42nd and the lake. Humboldt Park, elevated, branched off from the Logan Square line and ran just north of North Avenue to about 3700 West. The one that came back was the Niles Center line, which later, after they closed it for more than a dozen years, it eventually became what we know as the Yellow Line, the Skokie Swift. So they brought that one back. But all the others, you'd hardly find a trace of them now.
Wow. And you literally have to, like, if you missed your stop, you have to come loop back around for the most part, right? You know, because I remember my grandmother telling me that when she was dating my grandfather, that he would fall asleep on the L and he would just circle the city for hours, which is probably not uncommon either.
One of the things that I found most interesting was I found a picture online, and I managed to get it in my book. It shows a three-year-old Japanese-American child who was born in an internment camp in World War II, posing with his uncle in front of the end of the line of the Kenwood Elevated at 42nd and Oakenwald. They lived across the street. They were permitted to live there. They had segregation in the city at the time. And he grew up right next to the Kenwood Elevated, and as a kid, he told me that the motorman would let him operate the train sometimes.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
And he's still alive, and I managed to contact him. He lives in Chicago.
That's great.
He's active in the Japanese-American community, and the picture's in the book.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool. Today's L-Track stretch about 225 miles, about 1,300 cars. Is that correct?
Yeah, 225 miles of track. So, you know, mostly that's double track, and in some places they've got four tracks.
And there's a lot of, you know, there's some modernization going on, obviously. You know, in 2018, the CTA approved, like, couple billion dollars for the contracts to do the red and purple lines and the bypass that allows the brown line trains to travel above the red and purple. So, you know, there's projects that have begun in like 2019, I think, and they're scheduled for completion in 2025, correct?
Yeah, the bypass you're talking about, Clark Junction, just north of Belmont, that one is going to take it's going to separate the brown line trains from the red line and the purple line, so they don't cross each other. That one is going to go into service later this year.
Oh, already?
Wow. Yeah, and it's going to take a few years to do the RPM project further north, where they're redoing the whole embankment, which is now over 100 years old.
Wow!
They're completely redoing a big section of it.
Very cool. Now you're doing where are you doing an appearance in Logan Square? Tell me about this.
Week from tomorrow, Saturday, July 24th at 1 p.m., I'm going to be at City Lit Books in Logan Square, 2523 North Kedzie. And interestingly, the building that City Lit Books is in was once the terminal of the Logan Square L.
Very cool.
You wouldn't recognize it, but it's the same building.
Yeah, that's very cool. And on we go. David's new book is Chicago's Lost L's. His website is thetrolleydodger.com. David, always a pleasure, and thanks for being here with us in studio.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.